Vidura has returned from so many years of wandering from one place, holy place, to another. Because that type of wandering, that type of pilgrimage is very purifying for so many reasons. First, it detaches one from all one's attachments. Distance separates one from those whom one is attached to. If one is attached to his fine soft bed and his big chest of drawers and his so many sets of clothes and all the other things we tend to become attached to, one has to leave them behind for the simple reason you can't take them with you. And detachment from matter is so important. Why? Because at the time of death, if we're hankering for something on the material level, that will force us to come back, take another corresponding birth so we can have that thing. So very dangerous, material attachments. So separation from one's material attachments, also one is wandering, one is simply not in control of what's happening. You're in your own little area. You can set it up just the way you want, try to control it in such a way that it is just suitable to you and your needs, but when one is wandering, either alone or with others, you're depending on others' mercy. You have to put up with whatever happens. Again, because we have no choice. This is usually what purifies us. It's not that we choose usually to perform austerities and to become purified in these type of ways, but when we have no choice, that's when we do it. So on Parikrama, this type of traveling from one holy place to another, one is choosing or placing himself in a position where one is clearly not in control. And as soon as one actually places oneself in that position, there's such a relief in the consciousness. Because the great struggle of the mind is trying to control everything, which basically is imitative of the actual control of the Ishvara Krishna. So this is, no wonder we're in anxiety, because there's no way we can do it. He's God. We're just tiny, insignificant creatures. And the more potency, ability we have to control, the more shakti we have to control, that the more anxiety we will actually be in when things go out of our control, which must happen at the time of death. So these type of purificatory things, what to speak of the positive side of the purification, going to a holy place, seeing holy people, because holy people stay in holy places, hearing from them, getting our hearts touched by their heart. That means the internal energy affects our consciousness. Therefore, sarva siddhi hoy, lava matra sarva sanghes. Sarva siddhi hoy. This is what happens by association. A different taste than the usual taste of matter enters our heart. And seeing the deities, and when we see God in the deity form, naturally we pray. We express our desires, oh, please break this material attachment. Please let me become a good devotee. Please this, please that. So he came back after hearing from Maitreya Muni. Not only was he purified in that way, and of course Vidura was Yamaraj, so he wasn't needed of any purification. But there, after understanding about the departure of Krishna, the Yadu dynasty from this world, he met Uddhava. Uddhava sent him to Maitreya. He heard, I don't know how long, but he heard the entirety of Canto 3, which is very long, and Canto 4, which is also very long for Maitreya Muni. And then he realized that he wished to save his brother Dhritarashtra, who was nearby in Hastinapur from Delhi, from Haridwar. So when Vidura came in, everyone greeted him. And Vidura actually understood the full situation for everyone there, especially within the palace. He understood the situation for Dhritarashtra. As the last verse we read yesterday, or on Friday rather, said that time, Dhritarashtra was within the palace, elderly, blind, so comfortable, but yet time, day by day, not even day by day, hour by hour, minute by minute, day by day, week by week, month by month, was imperceptibly stealing away the remainder of his life. Because time has a specific purpose in human life. On one level, it's meant for frustration on the material level. Time must frustrate us. It must. Either we won't get what we want, or what we want we will get. In either case, we'll be frustrated and fearful. And then ultimately, on the spiritual level, if we're not using our time properly, we're not developing an attraction for Krishna, and we're preparing for our next life in the material world, our next birth, and then our next death, and then next, so just re-entering this cycle. So Vidura clearly understood this was the situation with Dhritarashtra. And out of his compassion, he decided to free him. If we think of Dhritarashtra as bound tightly with ropes of his circumstances, he was old, he was blind, he was royalty, so trapped, used to comforts, used to people doing everything that he wanted. So many servants, ideal wife. This is like a binding of ropes, many, many, many thick ropes. Goodness, passion, and ignorance, attachments. These are the ropes of material life. So Vidura, the sadhu, was going to free him. And he was going to use the knife of his sharp words to cut him free from these ropes. And now we're ready to hear Vidura's cutting words. The sadhu will speak. I think we read the purport of 18 on Friday, is that right? Okay, so we'll read the verse, but we won't go over the purport. So Mahatma Vidura immediately spoke to Dhritarashtra in the presence of everyone, "My dear king," sarcastically calling him Rajan, because he was not the king, he had lost the kingdom. "Please get out of here immediately." Just think how radical. You know what the word radical means, the Latin of radical? What does it mean in French, radical? Yes, but it actually means like the word, English word, radish. Where does the radish or the muli grow? Where does it grow, the radish? Yes. Radical, or the root rad means the root. Actually, it means like mul, the root. So he's saying something just at the root of the problem, very radical, that you should get out. An old man who is blind, who has spent his life being cared for in the kingdom, he's telling him to get out immediately. That's radical. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you. This frightful situation, fear has overtaken you. This frightful situation, what is he talking about? What is he afraid of? This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in the material world. My Lord is now going to define what that frightful situation is. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time, Kala, that has approached us all. I'll read through the verses, then we'll read purports. Whoever is under the influence of Supreme Kala, eternal time, must surrender his most dear life, and what to speak of other things, such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home. Each and every one of us is in the grips of this serpent of time, Kala, Mahakala. And it is unbreakable because it is Krishna in that form. Kalosmin lokachaya krit, Krishna says in the 11th chapter. Time I am, the great destroyer, and I've come to kill everyone. This point strikes me again and again. Sometimes people become angry at God. Why have you done this to my brother, my sister, to these children, to this people that I know, and to those? But why don't people become radical and ask God, why are you killing every single person in this world? He's doing that. Why doesn't anyone complain about that and ask if there's any way out of that? Every single person is in the grips of time. The snake, the serpent, and he's tightening and tightening like a python. Whoever is under the influence of the Supreme Kala, eternal time, must surrender his most dear life, and what to speak of other things, such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home. Your father, brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. To live at the cost of another, live at the mercy of another, especially for a Kshatriya, is such a dishonor, such an insult. You have been blind from your birth. Recently, you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened, and your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose. Now he's getting really personal. Your liver is defective. Stop! And you are coughing up mucus. Alas, and now he's getting to get heavier. If that wasn't heavy enough to tell an old man, usually in the West at least, in the old age homes, they have the old people, they have like birthday parties and they have people coming in and this kind of entertainment, and treating them as if they were kids. Why? To make them forget what? What's going to happen? What's inevitable? How foolish, how cruel actually, because the old people are helpless and dependent, and they're stealing away the last days of their lives with frivolity. How foolish, how ignorant. So there's a principle. Everyone that you know and loved has died, practically speaking, and you yourself are getting closer. Old age is affecting you. Your teeth are falling out. Your liver, you can't hear. You can't see. Can't digest. No teeth, can't eat. No, and even if you could, no liver can't digest. But now, Even though that's so heavy and cutting to say to an elderly person, he's going to say something even heavier. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. Verily, you'll do anything, you'll give up your honor just to continue living. Where is your honor? Verily, you are living just like a household dog and are eating remnants of food given by Bhima. Bhima was the one who had killed each and every one of Dhritarashtra's sons on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He ripped open Duryodhana's chest and all of them was drinking their blood. He was so angry for them having insulted Draupadi. He had promised he would do this and he succeeded. And after the battle, all the Pandavas came, and one by one, they embraced Dhritarashtra, making amends. But they when it was Bhima's turn, they said, "No, don't do it, Bhima." And they took an iron statue of Bhima, and Dhritarashtra crushed it. You are living like a household dog, eating remnant scraps of food. Such a dishonorable position, O king. All you care about is just to remain alive somehow or another. To say this to a kshatriya. Cut, cut, cut. There is no need to lead a degraded life and subsist on the charity of those whom you tried to kill by arson and poisoning. You also insulted one of their wives and usurped their kingdom and wealth. Usurp means unlawfully acquired. You stole their wealth, their wife, their kingdom, and now they are being kind to you and giving you full facility, but you have no honor and pride. You are accepting it. But you are doing this just to maintain your life. But despite your unwillingness to die, and despite your desire to live, even at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle and deteriorate like an old garment. Despite you sacrificing all your honor to remain alive, it will be to no avail. Your body will die, nevertheless. Very heavy. But it was done with affection. This is the qualification, actually, for one who is allowed to chastise another, meaning another devotee. Or like a family member, it has to be done with affection. Otherwise, it won't have the right effect. If there is true animosity in the heart, the correction will not have the right effect. There must be affection. Then chastisement will be accepted. So in the purport to 18, Prabhupada says, just see how fear has overtaken you. That's the verse. Leave immediately. Vidura says, purport, cruel death cares for no one. Oh, we read this, didn't we? We'll go start to 19. This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in the material world. You're being pursued by death, but you are not alone. Each and every person within the material world, whether we're young or we're old, we're all individually, we have an appointment already set up, like that famous Sufi story about the man, I can't remember the details, but just like I'll transpose it to India, that there was a man living, a wealthy man, and he was supposed to go in the afternoon to Agra. But instead, in the morning, he went to Mathura to buy something. And there in Mathura, he was shocked because as he was standing there, death personified stared at him. And death personified looked shocked when he saw him. So the man was terrified and immediately ran back to his house. And he was so frightened that he wouldn't stay at home. And then he ran as fast as he could, by the fastest way he could, to Agra. So the father was very upset. So he called death before him and said, "Why have you frightened my son in this way? You looked at him, you stared at him with a shock. You were shocked and your shock terrified him. Why did you do this?" He was just marketing, buying something in Mathura. Now he's run away. "Why did you do this?" And death said, "Actually, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to shock him in that way. But I was truly surprised when I saw him in Mathura." "Why were you so surprised?" "Because he was in Mathura," death answered, "and I had an appointment with him in Agra this afternoon." Did I tell it well enough that you understood? Yeah. And there, of course, he had run to escape to Agra. Did you all hear that story before? Everyone is sorry then. But that's the way of death. It's unescapable. This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time that has approached us all. Because it is Daiviyesha Gunamayi, this Maya, Mama Maya, Dharatyaya. This is why it is Dharatyaya, so hard to overcome. Because it is Daivi, it is divine. It is empowered by Krishna. And time indeed is the energy of the Paramatma. And therefore it is, no one can overcome it. Prabhupada's purport. There is no superior power which can check the cruel hands of death. No one wants to die, however acute the source of bodily suffering may be. Even in the days of so-called scientific advancement of knowledge, there is no remedial measure either for old age or for death. Old age is the notice of the arrival of death, served by cruel time, and no one can refuse to accept either summons, call, or the supreme judgment of eternal time. This is explained before Dhritarashtra because he might ask Vidura to find out some remedial measure for the imminent fearful situation, as he had ordered many times before. He always used to rely on Vidura. "I have this problem, you solve it. You tell me the solution." But even Vidura can't find the solution to impending death. Not all the scientists in the world, even if we pile them one on top of each other, they can't solve this problem, although they make promises. And because there is no such thing in the material world as a cure, death is identical. Mrityu aham. What does Krishna say? Say it in Sanskrit, please. Mrityu sarva harasya ham chaham. Thank you. So death is therefore identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as said by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Death cannot be checked by anyone or from any source within this material world. To text 20. Therefore, people don't talk about this. People don't like to talk about death. People don't like to hear about death. Towards the end of the purport to 20, the conclusion is there is no powerful living being within the universe who could overcome the influence of time. It's interesting how in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's so many little stories, one after another. And some people get cursed and their lives are ruined, and their lives are truly ruined. Other people get cursed and their lives are ruined, and then they perform austerities and they go back to Godhead to escape the curse. Very interesting. So everyone is cursed by this, by the serpent of time that has captured us. And there is only really, ultimately, one way out, and that is to go back to Godhead. The conclusion is there is no powerful living being within the universe who can overcome the influence of time. Many poets have written verses lamenting the influence of time. Many devastations have taken place over the universe due to the influence of time, and no one can check them by any means. Prabhupada used to quote, "Time and tide waits for no man." The tides of the ocean and river. Even in our daily life, so many things come and go in which we have no hand, but we have to suffer or tolerate them without remedial measure. That is the result of time. And then Vidura explains that everyone has already died, your sons, your father, your brothers. 21. The king is reminded of his precarious condition, influenced by cruel time. And by his past experience, he should have been more intelligent to see what was going to happen to his own life. His father, Vachitravirya, died long ago when he and his younger brothers were all little children. And it was due to the care and kindness of Bhishma Dev that they were properly brought up. Then again, his brother Pandu died also. Then in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, his 100 sons and his grandsons died, along with all other well-wishers like Bhishma Dev, Dronacharya, Karna, and many other kings and friends. So he had lost all men and money, and now he was living at the mercy of his nephew, whom he had put into troubles of various types. And despite all these reverses, he thought that he would prolong his life more and more. Vidura wanted to point out to Dhritarashtra that everyone has to protect himself by his action and the grace of the Lord. I liked that. That really struck me when I was reading, preparing for class. That we don't just wait, not only wait for Krishna, but we protect ourselves and act as best we understand by ourselves and ultimately depend on Krishna for the result. One has to execute his duty faithfully, depending for the result on the supreme authority. No friend, no children, no father, no brother, no state, and no one else can protect a person who is not protected by the Supreme Lord. One should therefore seek the protection of the Supreme Lord, for the human form of life is meant for seeking that protection. He has warned of his precarious conditions more and more by the following words. So Vidura is increasing the pressure. The symptoms of old age, which have already developed in Dhritarashtra, one after another, pointed out to him as warning that death was nearing very quickly. And still he was foolishly carefree about his future. The signs pointed out by Vidura in the body of Dhritarashtra were signs of apakkhaya, or dwindling of the material body, before the last stroke of death. The body is born, it develops, stays, creates other bodies, dwindles, and then vanishes. But foolish men want to make a permanent settlement of the perishable body and think that their estate, children, society, country, etc. will give them protection. So what do people do when they get old? Instead of acknowledging what these signs mean, they try to cover them and remove them. They replace their knees, their hips, and when their face gets wrinkled, they have surgery that pulls back the skin so that they look 10 years younger for a short time, just putting their head in the sand. And I find, now that I'm getting quite old, I find that this is the tendency, very strongly. One doesn't want to acknowledge what's going to happen and become very serious about dealing with it. It's the very tendency of someone caught in the material, in material life. As Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was very, very, he was quite sick and thin, he saw one of the devotees, a sannyasi, he was looking at him with a little bit of repulsion, at least that's what Prabhupada perceived, that there was a bit of repulsion. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Don't think that this isn't going to happen to you. But the fact is that all of us think that this isn't going to happen to us. But don't think, because you'll be wrong, because it is going to happen." Yes? All those who really are convinced, raise your hand. Yes. It must happen. I never expected it to happen to me. Really, I mean this. I never thought it was going to happen to me. Even after years of chanting Hare Krishna, I never thought it was going to happen to me. But it did, and it is, and it's just going to get worse because my teeth are falling out and my eyes and my liver is weak. The whole thing. But my hair falls out before it gets gray. So we forget. And then the tendency, another thing that I've seen, is that when one approaches, gets around 50 or so, where one should start performing austerities and get renounced, etc., leave family, that's the last thing you want to do. Because you spent your whole life working so hard and finally you have a soft chair and you've finally gotten a comfortable something or other arranged. And finally, you know, your children are grown up, you don't have to worry about them anymore. The last thing you want to do is leave your comfortable situation. That's what Dhritarashtra was suffering from. Even though Dhritarashtra means one who holds on to the kingdom, literally it means that. But still this tendency to hold on to the kingdom that we don't have the ability and the piety to have a big kingdom to hold on to like he. But everyone in the material world finds some little kingdom that he becomes the lord of and tries to control for his comfort and pleasure and survival even. So we all tend in this Dhritarashtra direction. So Vidura, as Prabhupada says in the last two lines, and Prabhupada talks about shobaral sadhus. You know, he uses that term. It's not a common term. Shobaral. What does shobaral mean? What does it actually mean? Where does it come from? Yeah, just a shobaro, nothing in it. So shobaro sadhus, and I remember one time there was quite a big sannyasi, who not impersonalist yogi, who was preaching in the United States. His name was Satchidananda Swami. And he actually met Prabhupada even And I met him one time. It's a long, funny story, but I won't bother with it now. But there was a wealthy Indian man in Hong Kong that I had visited. And this man had a strong relationship with the Swami Satchidananda. So this man was not a vegetarian. So he told me that when the Swami came, he invited him for breakfast. And of course, Swamis like to be invited to wealthy persons' houses because some donation is there. So he served the Swami vegetarian food, and in front of the Swami, he was too embarrassed to take his usual meat or anything like that. So he also was eating vegetarian food. So this is what the man told me. The Swami said to him, "Why are you eating vegetarian food? You don't usually eat vegetarian food." He said, "In front of you, I didn't want to do that." And he said, so the Swami Satchidananda said, "The tigers don't eat the same food as the yak." He was saying that he was a tiger, but he should have actually said as the monkeys. But he said, "The tigers don't eat the same food. You don't be shy. You eat what you eat. Shobalo. But of course, the man thought, "Yes, I'm a tiger. I shouldn't have." But he's not a tiger. He's a human being. That was the flaw, I decided, in what he was saying. So this sadhu, this real sadhu, not Shobalo sadhu, as Prabhupada explains in the last two lines of the purport to 22, was not a sadhu to satisfy the ill-gotten sentiment of Dhritarashtra. He was correctly pointing out the real situation of life and how one can save oneself from such a catastrophe. Continuing for 23, when he says about Bhim, same point, a sadhu like Vidura is meant to awaken such blind persons and thus help them go back to Godhead, where life is eternal. Once going there, no one wants to come back to this material world of misery. We can just imagine how responsible a task is entrusted to a sadhu like Mahatma Vidura. Read that last sentence again that Prabhupada is saying. First of all, the job of a sadhu is to awaken sleeping blind persons to their precarious, dangerous position. We can just imagine how responsible a task is entrusted to a sadhu like Mahatma Vidura. What do you understand from that line of Prabhupada's? What word really stands out? That responsible, entrusted. Do you feel the finger pointing at you? Yes? 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 Yes or no? No, not me. I don't. Very heavy. Very heavy. Within the word entrusted is the word trust. To be trusted with that task by Krishna, by Guru. But not only pray, we have to work hard and depend on their grace. We have to do our part also. 24, Prabhupada says, to stick to family life to the end of one's human life is the grossest type of degradation, and there is an absolute need for the Viduras to educate such Dhritarashtras, even at the present moment. Those two were written before Prabhupada came to the West and established ISKCON. So that really was what Prabhupada was always trying to do, to create many, 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 many Viduras to wake up the many, many, many Dhritarashtras. purport to 25. Vidura is trying to open his eyes to see that, Vidura is trying to open his, Dhritarashtra's eyes, to see that he cannot live more than his term and that he must prepare for death. Since death is inevitable, why should he accept such a humiliating position for living? It is better to take the right path, even at the risk of death. Human life is meant for finishing all kinds of miseries of material existence, and life should be so regulated that one can achieve the desired goal. Dhritarashtra, due to his wrong conception of life, had already spoiled 80% of his achieved energy. So it behooved him to utilize the remaining days of his miserly life. Where does the word miserly come from in the verse? Kripana, yes. Miserly life. Misused, not using what you have. A miser has wealth but doesn't use it. A kripana is one who has a human life, but he doesn't truly use that which a human life affords him. So he should use the remaining days of his miserly life for the ultimate good. Such a life is called miserly because one cannot properly utilize the assets of the human form of life. Only by good luck does such a miserly man meet a self-realized soul like Vidura, and by his instruction gets rid of the nescience of material existence. What does that mean? Only by good luck. What is Prabhupada saying? So good luck is really fortunate. So it's a great fortune if someone awakens you in this way. But in that verse, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagyavan, fortunate jeev, Guru Krishna. But what is this good luck or fortune? Where does it come from? Is it just because good fortune, chance? What does it mean? It's Guru Krishna. It's Vidura is acting as guru. Sometimes we have to acknowledge both parts of this. The good fortune is God's grace inspiring the preacher, and the cooperation and of the preacher, use of his free will, cooperating with God's grace. But if you ask the preacher, he'll say it's only God's grace. But if you ask God, he'll say it's the preacher's mercy. It's so therefore Guru Krishna Prasadeva, because there has to be respect and honor given to both. Not just God and not just the preacher, the devotee, but both. So he's cut very, very heavily. The ropes of Vidura, the attachments of Vidura, the mentality of Vidura, because all these attachments sit in the mind. So through the intelligence, these sharp words, he's cut. And then Vidura says three more verses. I'm not going to read the purports, but I'm going to... But we'll make some discriminations in here because it's a little hard to understand clearly unless you sit down and put the pieces together a bit. So what should one do if one has these attachments and he suddenly discovers, yes, I'm so attached, and yes, it's true, I am old. And yes, it's true that this old age, rather than being a misfortune, is a great fortune because it's a indication, it's a notice given to me that I'm soon to die. So now, by the grace of Vidura, I've awakened to something that, yes, I'm going to die. But does that stop me from dying? No. So what actually can be done? So Vidura now gives some instructions as to what actually should be done. He is called undisturbed. So he's not telling them exactly that he should do this at this point, although he has told them that he should leave. He is called undisturbed, and what's the Sanskrit? Savai dhira udharitaha. He is called dhira, undisturbed, who goes to an unknown remote place and freed from all obligations, quits his material body when it has become useless. So now a term has been introduced, dhira. Before that, another term was introduced in the previous verse, a kripana, a miserly person who holds on to his life to the very end, not using it properly. But here a dhira is one who leaves. Prabhupada explains in the purport, dhira means one who is not disturbed even when there is sufficient provocation. One cannot give up a comfortable family life due to his affectionate relationship with his wife and children. Self-realization is obstructed by such undue affection for family. And if anyone is at all able to forget such a relation, he is called undisturbed or dhira. He is certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus leaves home and depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing within his heart. People say, I'll leave when I'm detached, but that will never happen. The way to get detached is to leave. So that's a dhira. A kripana stays, a dhira leaves. And then he becomes a sannyasi, or a renounced person. But there are two kinds of sannyasis, Srila Prabhupada will explain. One, in the first part of this verse, it describes one who is frustrated by the falsity and misery of this material world. And there are many people like that. I've seen. Life hasn't treated them well, and they become detached and renounced due to the frustrations of life. But that type of a sannyasi cannot compare with the next type of sannyasi, who is called a Narottama, the topmost of Naras, or human beings, a Narottama. And he is defined as someone who depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing within his heart. This is the topmost human being. Someone who is surrendered to Krishna. Gotripte varanam dita. This is the essence of surrender. Of sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam vraja. The essence of manmana bhava madbhakto madhyuji mamnamaskaru. Full dependence on Krishna, but not doing whatever one wants, and then so-called depending on Krishna, but depending on Krishna while one is trying to please Krishna. Anukulena Krishna Nashilana. So one is trying to please Krishna, working in that way, using his energy, his life in that way, and then at the same time, just depending on Krishna, and not only depending on Krishna, but accepting Krishna's arrangements, where they are things that we like, things that we don't like, things that we hate. This is Krishna's mercy. Okay. Tam statichasva bharata. Then one is not only a dhira, yes, he's dhira, and not only is he a sannyasi, renounced, yes, he's a sannyasi, but he's Narottama. Narottam, the topmost human being, accepting Krishna's mercy and depending on Krishna's mercy. Jivatiyo mukti pade sadayavak. Such a person easily goes back. He inherits it naturally, the kingdom of God. Now here's the direct instruction of what should he do. Please, therefore, this is 28, leave for the north immediately, without letting your relatives know. Why shouldn't he let his relatives know? Why shouldn't they love him? They care for him. What happens when he leaves? They're going to be miserable. They're going to be worried. They're going to be terrified that something bad will happen to him. Why shouldn't he let him know?
They may overwhelm him with their
what will they say? They'll not let him go. Stay, we'll take care of you. You can pray here. What's the problem? It's natural. Everyone will do that to someone they love. Because the love is very, very much to do with the physical relationship, the body. So it seems cruel in one sense to cut in this way, but actually there's no other way to do it. Or very rarely is there another way to do it. Leave for the north immediately without letting your relatives know. Now why should he do it immediately? What's the pressingness? What's the urgency? For soon, that time will approach which will diminish the good qualities of men. And what is he speaking of, Vidura speaking of? Do you know? Kali Yuga is coming. And Kali Yuga is so powerful that it overwhelms everything, every spiritual sense that every person has. Prabhupada's purport explains it really clearly. How does he know that Kali Yuga is coming? How does Vidura know? Yes? Because he knows that Krishna has just left, departed from this world. But Yudhisthira, the Pandavas, don't know. Dhritarashtra doesn't know. He hasn't told them. But he's indirectly saying it because Kali Yuga comes just as Krishna leaves. It begins. It will diminish the good qualities of men. So difficult to be good, truthful, pure in Kali Yuga. Everything, the energy of the world is working against it. One can compensate, Prabhupada explains, for a life of frustration by becoming a dhira or leaving home for good without communicating with relatives. Or they'll say, okay, you can leave, but write every week. Make sure you write every week and we'll send you some money. You don't have to worry. That's what Raghunath does, Goswami's. Devotee parents did. And they only let him go after he escaped. Vidura advised his elder brother to adopt this way without delay because very quickly the age of Kali was approaching. A conditioned soul is already degraded by the material association, and still in the Kali Yuga the good qualities of man will deteriorate to the lowest standard. He was advised to leave home before Kali Yuga approached because the atmosphere which was created by Vidura, his valuable instructions on facts of life, would fade away due to the influence of the age which was fast approaching. So there was a window created by this association by Vidura where things were cut. The ropes were cut. But they don't always stay cut. Just like that pastime you told yesterday with Prabhupada. If I understood it correctly, Krishna from within you gave you some very opportune, he gave you some very strong words. And he pierced your heart with those words, basically telling you, now is the time. If this door closes, we finished. And you so wonderfully grabbed the feet of Prabhupada, jumped in. Yes, how wonderful. Just like this, just fell down. Just like this. The window opens only for a moment. And we think, oh, later, 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 I can do it. What's the problem? But we don't know what problem will come. But we do know that Maya is very strong and very, very covering and very powerful. Very powerful. So when Krishna, and this happens at different times in our life, Krishna opens this window or door and he lets you know that now it is open. But you still have freedom to walk through or not, or to walk through and fall down at Prabhupada's lotus feet or not. You have your freedom. He opens the window. It happened to Dhruva Maharaj. Not Dhruva, excuse me. It happened to Narada Muni. He saw that when, even as a young boy, he was 6 years old, and he wasn't wishing ill for his mother, but yet, by Krishna's arrangement, his mother died. And he saw that as the window of opportunity opened by Krishna. And he so quickly walked through. Even though he was six. Even though he had no one. But when Krishna opens, you have, if you walk through, he's also promising that he'll care for you. So it takes a bravery, and it's moving onward. I'm going to go longer today because I talked much more than I should have. Thus Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the scion of the family of Ajamidha, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, pragya, broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Yet, he said, leave immediately because Kali Yuga is coming. Even though he had those qualities, still he had to act fast. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother, Vidura. Prabhupada in his purport. Talks about the importance of association with sadhus. Prabhupada explains, we are not ashamed to admit that this fact was experienced in our practical life. Were we not favored by his divine grace, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, by our first meeting for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Again, this was written by Prabhupada before he went to the West. What to speak of the mighty task of going to the West alone, single-handed, no money, no support, no anything except dependence on Krishna. Without seeing him at that opportune moment, we could have become a very great business magnate, but never would we have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the factual service of the Lord under instructions of His divine grace. And here is another practical example by the action of Vidura's association with Dhritarashtra. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was tightly bound in a network of material affinities related to politics, economy, and family attachment. And he did everything in his power to achieve so-called success in his planned projects, but he was frustrated from the beginning to the end so far as material activities were concerned. And yet, despite his life of failure, he achieved the greatest of all success in self-realization by the forceful instructions of a pure devotee of the Lord, who is the typical emblem of a sadhu. The scriptures enjoin, therefore, that one should associate with sadhus only, rejecting all kinds of association. And by doing so, one will have ample opportunity to hear the sadhus, who can cut to pieces the bonds of illusory affection in the material world. It is a fact that the material world is a great illusion because everything appears to be a tangible reality, but at the next moment, it evaporates like the dashing foam of the sea or a cloud in the sky. So he left without telling anyone. He left. The gentleman chased Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subal of Kandahar. That has become very famous in the last year. Kandahar, where is Kandahar? Afghanistan, yes. So she was from Afghanistan. She followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. So it is a harsh place. But yet, just like a warrior in the fight gained strength if he's truly a warrior. Similarly, by one who is actually determinedly renounced gains strength by the hardship and difficulty because he takes shelter of Krishna. So they left. Gandhari also. Vidura, the three of them, they're talking. Vidura is preaching for days. And then one morning, Yudhisthira awakens. And he sees that they're gone. All three are gone. Text 31. Maharaj Yudhisthira, whose enemy was never born, performed his daily morning duties by praying, offering fire sacrifices to the sun god, and offering obeisances, grains, cows, land, and gold to the Brahmins. This was his morning regulatory duties. He then entered the palace to pay respects to the elderly. However, he could not find his uncles or aunt, the daughter of King Subal. Maharaj Yudhisthira, full of anxiety, turned to Sanjay, who was sitting there, and said, "O Sanjay, where is our uncle, who is old and blind? Where is my well-wisher, Uncle Vidura, and Mother Gandhari, who is very much afflicted due to all her son's demise? My uncle Dhritarashtra was also very mortified due to the death of all his sons and grandsons. Undoubtedly, I am very ungrateful. Did he, therefore, take my offenses very seriously and, along with his wife, drown himself in the Ganges?" Listen to this purport of Prabhupada's, expanding on the mood of Maharaj Yudhisthira. The Pandavas, especially Maharaj Yudhisthira and Arjuna, anticipated the after effects of the battle of Kurukshetra, and therefore Arjuna declined to execute the fighting. The fight was executed by the will of the Lord, but the effects of family aggrievement, as they had thought of it before, had come to be true. Maharaj Yudhisthira was always conscious of the great plight of his uncle Dhritarashtra and Aunt Gandhari, and therefore he took all possible care of them in their own age and aggrieved conditions, in their old age and aggrieved conditions. When, therefore, he could not find his uncle and aunt in the palace, naturally his doubts arose, and he conjectured that they had gone down to the water of the Ganges. He thought himself ungrateful because when the Pandavas were fatherless, Maharaj Dhritarashtra had given them all royal facilities to live, and in return he had killed all Dhritarashtra's sons in the battle of Kurukshetra. As a pious man, Maharaj Yudhisthira took into account all his unavoidable misdeeds, and he never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord, but Maharaj Yudhisthira was thinking only of his own unavoidable misdeeds. That is the nature of a good man and a devotee of the Lord. A devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. When my father, Pandu, fell down and we were all small children, these two uncles gave us protection from all kinds of calamities. They were always our good well wishes. Alas, where have they gone from here? Sutta Goswami said, because of compassion and mental agitation, Sanjay, because he was asking that of Sanjay, not having seen his own master Dhritarashtra, was aggrieved and could not properly reply to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Purport. Sanjay was the personal assistant of Maharaj Dhritarashtra for a very long time, 40 years at least. And thus he had the opportunity to study the life of Dhritarashtra. And when he saw that at last Dhritarashtra had left home without his knowledge, his sorrows had no bound. He was fully compassionate upon Dhritarashtra because in the game of the battle of Kurukshetra, King Dhritarashtra had lost everything, men and money. And at last the king and the queen had to leave home in utter frustration. He studied the situation in his own way because he did not know that the inner vision of Dhritarashtra had been awakened by Vidura, and therefore he had left home in enthusiastic cheerfulness for a better life after departure from the dark well of home. Unless one is convinced of a better life after renunciation of the present life, one cannot stick to the renounced order of life simply by artificial dress or staying out of the home. This is Sanjay speaking. He's about to reply to Dhritarashtra what had happened. First, he slowly pacified his mind by intelligence and wiping away his tears and thinking of the feet of his master, Dhritarashtra. He began to reply to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Sanjay said, "My dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty, I have no information of the determination of your two uncles in Gandhari. O king, I have been cheated by those great souls." Listen again to Prabhupada's purport. Autobiographical. That great souls cheat others may be astonishing to know, but it is a fact that great souls cheat others for a great cause. It is said that Lord Krishna also advised Yudhisthira to tell a lie before Dronacharya, and it was also for a great cause. The Lord wanted it, and therefore it was a great cause. Satisfaction of the Lord is the criterion for one who is bona fide, and the highest perfection of life is to satisfy the Lord's by one's occupational duty. That is the verdict of Gita and Bhagavatam. Dhritarashtra and Vidura, followed by Gandhari, did not disclose their determination to Sanjay, although he was constantly with Dhritarashtra as his personal assistant. Sanjay never thought that Dhritarashtra could perform any act without consulting him. But Dhritarashtra's going away from home was so confidential that it could not be disclosed even to Sanjay. Sanatana Goswami also cheated the keeper of the prison house while going away to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And similarly, Raghunath Das Goswami also cheated his priest. What was his priest's name? And not only was it his priest, it was his, and also a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But this was Mahaprabhu's desire. This was Krishna's desire. Huh? Jarunanda. Jarunandana. Yes. Raghunath Das Goswami also cheated his priest and left home for good to satisfy the Lord. To satisfy the Lord, anything is good, for it is in relation with the absolute truth. We also had the same opportunity to cheat the family members and leave home to engage in the service of Srimad Bhagavatam. Such cheating was necessary for a great cause, and there was no loss for any party in such transcendental fraud. But we shouldn't imitate unless we know this is actually what Krishna wants, because there is too much fraud going on in the name of transcendental fraud and ultimately gets us trouble. Yes. Yes, he says that many times. Harisha Tadaram Sanai from 10th canto, late. But let me finish so we could talk. Now, while Sanjay was thus speaking, Sri Narada, the powerful devotee of the Lord, appeared on the scene carrying his tambaru. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers received him properly by getting up from their seats and offering obeisances. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, "O great personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt who is grief-stricken by the loss of her sons." And we'll stop there. And tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll hear Narada's reply. But before we do that, what I would like to know from you is, what was the preaching, what was the problem of Dhritarashtra, and what actually was the preaching of Vidura? What was his problem? What was his cowardliness? Okay, now think about these points. What was it? Talk about this more. What was his fault, his mistake, his impropriety? He was weak, okay. What was that weakness causing him to do? Honey. Yes, but why, what was, yes, that's certainly true. But there's something more in there. Just imagine him, old, lost all his sons, blind. Yes, he was fearful of what?
Death.
Yes, he was fearful of death, but before you're fearful of death, what are you fearful of? Yeah, but what's in that fear? What was in his fear? Yeah, what is the real... What? Losing. Yeah, okay, but what was his illusion? He was? Yes. Why was he staying there? Yes. Yes, let's move it that way. Okay, he was trying to maintain his body. He was completely dependent on these people. Therefore, the preaching was to cut the dependence. And what was he telling them? You're depending on these people and making believe that they're protecting you. You're in the illusion that they're protecting you because they're feeding you, they're listening to you. You snap your fingers, they come. You're depending on them. But what's the fault in that dependence? What's the fault in that dependence? Yes. Yeah, okay, but what's the fault of that? Just imagine you're old. And you're used to these people bringing your food every day. You're depending on them. What's the fault in that? What's the illusion of it? Yes, it's temporary. They can't protect you from death. You're taking shelter of these people, but you're in this caught by the snake of time. And it's crushing you and you're not even noticing it. It's going to kill you and you're thinking yourself sheltered by these people in your royal position, O king, who is not actually a king. Don't you see what's happening? While you feel yourself secure and comfortable, your life is ending moment by moment by moment. You're feeling yourself secure and safe and well protected. But these people cannot actually protect you from death. Well, then the question comes. So therefore, Vidura is preaching. Cut, 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 cut. Don't you see you're going to die? Time is pushing you. You're taking shelter of them. But they can't actually protect you from death. You're depending upon them. But now I want you to learn something that I learned. He brought them northward to learn to depend upon Krishna. or to know that you can live without depending on these people. You have to become fixed in Dhritarashtra, as it turns out, wasn't pure enough to become a pure devotee. But at least you get rid of this false dependence and acknowledge reality and really depend upon Krishna. Acknowledge the real situation. Wake up. Get out of your illusion that you are protected here by depending on these people. And you learn to depend on Krishna. And then, if one actually learns to depend on Krishna, then one is depending upon that which is dependable. And that is surrender. And that is where bhakti begins. Depend upon Krishna. Don't depend on this illusion. That's what Maya does. It makes us depend upon that which is undependable. Get out of Maya, take shelter of Krishna. That was basically his preaching. But what we heard mostly was the pointing out the illusoriness of that which he was depending upon. Now, I wanted to stress this point because it comes up very strongly tomorrow, if Krishna allows it to. Something quite important. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Yes.
Because of the influence of Duryodhana. When Vidura, in the third canto, it comes out, he says the truth. Vidura speaks the truth, but Duryodhana immediately ruins everything. He says, your fault, Dhritarashtra, is this one thing, that you are under the influence of this Duryodhana.
Yeah.
I think it's come up quite a few times, actually, the answer. To put it simply, you try, if it's come up a few times. This in Bhishma Dev is when I was talking about it specifically, where it would come up again with Bhishma Dev. Because Bhishma Dev explained, if you're guided by the Brahmins, Gurus, Sadhu, Shastra, if you are acting dutifully, not to please Krishna, not just based on your desire to please Krishna the way you'd like to do it, but based also on the guidance of Sadhu, Guru, Shastra, and you've acted basically in the mode of goodness, then you've done your duty and it came out unfavorably, then you accept it. You do everything to follow your duty, to please Krishna as best you can, and again, if it's done in those ways, because that gets in the, that stops the, you know, the whimsical performance of duty and then saying it didn't work, Krishna's mercy. No. But if you've actually acted properly according to that guidance and it doesn't come out favorably, then you're accepted as Krishna's mercy and accept it. Your situation. And you can take further guidance. Have to accept. You have to be detached from the results. But often when someone is asking a question like that, they're thinking of something quite specific, a specific situation, often. And then when someone gives a general answer to a question that appears to be general but is actually specific, the general answer may not fit the specific question that is being asked in the guise of a general question. You follow me? So that was a general answer. If there's a specific question of, was this Krishna's mercy? You know, this particular thing happened at a particular time. Was this Krishna's mercy? And how should I deal with it? Then it has to be asked probably in a different setting. And maybe there's a different answer. But this is just because it was a general question, a general guidance. that came from Bhishma Dev. And again it came up here too, that we work hard. The Pandavas were said to work hard according to Krishna's mercy. And then they accept what happens as Krishna's grace. Any other questions or comments? Yes. How what?
Iskand devotees, they are coming to have Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Very beginning they doesn't have attachment, they gave up their family attachment. After coming and serving slowly, they will get attachments and how they can
Good question. That we have seen, yes, we'll stop that, that people understand this type of preaching, the temporary nature of the material world, and based on that, they give up things. And then, after they've given up everything, it seems that many devotees, after giving up everything, get attached again to material things. So, yes, that was the basic statement. So, what's the question? How to make it so that doesn't happen? Good question. Any advice? Yes. I have one objection to that. I agree with most of it when you say devotees must be taken care of. But that puts the responsibility on the carers, who also have some responsibility, but the devotees should want to also. But that's putting all the responsibility on them. You should want to yourself also. You've given up everything. Anyway, it's not all everyone else's responsibility. Mostly it's the individual's responsibility.
Yes. That is counteracting by absorbing oneself in Krishna's name.
Yes. Yes, that part 99% of what you said, I agreed with. Just that one little part. Because I taught for so many years, and I was trying to make people Krishna conscious, as if it was my responsibility that they become Krishna conscious. And then at one point I had a great revelation that I was in complete anxiety always because I was trying to make people Krishna conscious. And rather, it's better if they try to make themselves Krishna conscious and I help them. If they want help, and you can't help somebody who doesn't want help. Yes.
Well,
let's finish with this one. This is an interesting discussion that should go on. It takes time. Everyone should have a chance to speak their experience on this one. So you're saying very often it goes like this. Well, not really like that. It seems like it's like that, very renounced, but the renunciation is external. And then when you get more mature, when you realize who you are a bit and how your impurities, then you have to readjust so that later on you can become more renounced. That was your point. So it's not as simple. If someone is very strong and pure and determined and they have the proper sanskaras, but even if you don't have the proper sanskaras, if you have the strong enough determination and surrender to Guru and Krishna, then you can just go straight. But most people can't actually do that. So they quote surrender for 2-3 years. That is what I see. 2-3 years, they can. This is most people. They give up everything, but they're not giving up everything. They're actually just getting some basic training, and then their life often has to get readjusted. This is in the West. In India, somewhat different, because the young boys have, they have a chance to have been brought up simply, but in the West, that's not there. So often after some years, they readjust their situation. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 at most, generally. And then they have to be helped to see how that they can take their new situation in such a way that they can more gradually move forward.